Spawn of the Stars by Charles Willard Diffin. Part 1. When Cyrus R. Thurston bought himself a single-motored Staunton job, he was looking for new thrills. Flying around the East Coast had lost its zest. He wanted to join that jaunty group who spoke so easily of hopping off for Los Angeles. And what Cyrus Thurston wanted, he usually obtained. But if that young millionaire sportsman had been told that on his first flight his blocky, bullet-like ship was to pitch him headlong into the exact center of the wildest, strangest war this earth had ever seen, well, it is still probable that the Staunton Company would not have lost the sale. They were roaring through the starlit, calm night, 3,000 feet above a sage-sprinkled desert, when the trip ended. Slim Riley had the stick when the first blast of hot oil ripped slashingly across the pilot's window.
"There goes your old trip!" he yelled. "Why don't they try putting engines in these ships?"
He jammed over the throttle and, with motor idling, swept down toward the endless miles of moonlit waste. Wind? They had been boring into it. Through the open window he spotted a likely stretch of ground. Setting down the ship on a nice piece of Arizona desert was a mere detail for Slim.
"Let off a flare," he ordered, "when I give the word."
The white glare of it faded the stars as he sideslipped, then straightened out on his hand-picked field. The plane rolled down a clear space and stopped. The bright glare persisted while he stared curiously from the quiet cabin. Cutting the motor, he opened both windows, then grabbed Thurston by the shoulder.
"'Tis a curious thing, that,' he said unsteadily.
His hand pointed straight ahead. The flare died, but the bright stars of the desert country still shone on a glistening, shining bulb. It was 200 feet away. The lower part was lost in shadow, but its upper surfaces shone rounded and silvery, like a giant bubble. It towered in the air, scores of feet above the chaparral beside it. There was a round spot of black on its side, which looked absurdly like a door.
"I saw something moving," said Thurston slowly. "On the ground I saw—" "Oh, good Lord, Slim, it isn't real!"
Slim Riley made no reply. His eyes were riveted to an undulating, ghastly something that oozed and crawled in the pale light not far from the bulb. His hand was reaching, reaching. It found what he sought. He leaned toward the window. In his hand was the very pistol for discharging the flares. He aimed forward and up. The second flare hung close before it settled on the sandy floor. Its blinding whiteness made the more loathsome the sickening yellow of the flabby, flowing thing that writhed frantically in the glare. It was formless, shapeless, a heaving mound of nauseous matter. Yet even in its agonized writhing distortions they sensed the beating pulsations that marked it a living thing. There were unending ripplings crossing and recrossing through the convolutions. To Thurston there was suddenly a sickening likeness. The thing was a brain from a gigantic skull. It was naked, was suffering. The thing poured itself across the sand. Before the staring gaze of the speechless men an excrescence appeared, a thick bulb on the mass that protruded itself into a tentacle. At the end there grew instantly a hooked hand. It reached for the black opening in the great shell, found it, and the whole loathsome shapelessness poured itself up and through the hole. Only at the last was it still. In the dark opening the last slippery mass held quiet for endless seconds. It formed, as they watched, to a head, frightful, menacing. Eyes appeared in the head, eyes flat and round and black, save for a cross slid in each. Eyes that stared horribly and unchangingly into theirs. Below them a gaping mouth opened and closed. The head melted, was gone. And with its going came a rushing roar of sound. From under the metallic mask